Sunday! Every Sunday, side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Ray Guarino and Jody calls them as they seize them, and you better believe them. Here, relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! It's mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Ray and Joe cuss each other down track, barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Eat, Ray Guarino and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHBC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway sign. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Even!
All righty, folks, you have tuned in once again to Motor Mouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show, with your host, Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer on the other side of the mic and shop bench with me. Good morning, Chris. How you doing?
Good morning, Ray. I have something to say, Ray.
Oh, boy. All right.
Yes. Well, how do I usually start off these things? I go, Ray, Ray, Ray.
You channel your best Tom Nelson.
Ray.
Right. Let me tell you something.
Ray, I did something that I have not done since my early 20s.
You combed your hair.
No. Oh. I rebuilt a wheel cylinder.
Oh, wow.
All by myself, no less.
Okay.
There were no kids around us. There was no one playing ball in the street like usually. The last wheel cylinder I rebuilt, there was no one asking me, hey, kid, what are you doing? None of that. I was in my garage all by myself, and I rebuilt a wheel cylinder thinking about the old days, and I did it. So you want to know the backstory to this?
Sure.
I'll try and make it brief. This is only an hour show. Here's what happened. I have had a hard time trying to get those wheel cylinders off the back of the LeBaron. They were fused together. So I said to myself, self, I am going to attempt to rebuild the wheel cylinders. I had already ordered two new ones. I'll just take the guts out of them both and rehone the ones that are seized onto the backing plate. And I started to basically hone it with a cylinder-shaped sandpaper. And I know where you're, I can see your wheels turning already. I know the question you're going to ask, but I'm moving along.
Okay.
So I'm doing the honing, and with the wheel cylinder on the car, the driver's side came out very well. I put everything together. I lubed up the rubber pieces with brake fluid as a lubricant, fit it all together right there. It looked beautiful. Right. Then I went to go do the passenger side. So I pop off the dust caps, and what do I find but a seized cylinder? I had to get in there with a pair of vice grips and yank the thing out like a bad wisdom tooth.
Wow.
And I'm looking at it, and this is rusty mess. So this thing hadn't operated in years. But, of course, as I start honing, I see all the pits and this and imperfections in the cylinder itself. I'm like, that's not good. And then, of course, what sealed the deal was a ridge. A ridge had appeared at the bottom of the cylinder, and I said, maybe it's just a black spot on the metal. Oh, no. I ran a screwdriver just along it, just to run it along, and it was like going over a blip on a sidewalk, like a crack in a sidewalk. Clunk. I'm like, oh, that's not going to work. So what I had done previously is, because I am a scatterbrain, I had already oiled the connection between the brake line and the wheel cylinder. I only dump oil on it because I know PB Blaster is a rotten.
Yeah, I know you don't like it.
Why I ought a type of product.
Yeah.
So anyway, I realized that I was completely stuck at this point, seeing the ridge on the passenger wheel cylinder. So I said, I'm going to go for broke here. I put a line wrench on the connection, and I gave it everything I got to try and turn it. And believe it or not, I got a quarter of a turn out of it.
Nice.
I also got a quarter of a turn out of the brake line.
A quarter of a turn, yeah. That's what I'm afraid of.
But here's what I did. The brilliant individual I did, that I am, I undid the nuts that held the wheel cylinder to the backing plate and was able to spin the wheel cylinder off from the front of a locking nut against the brake line.
Oh, so the nut did loosen a little bit.
Well, it did. It loosened the connection between the brake line. Okay. It loosened the connection between the wheel cylinder and the nut. So right. I was able to get the wheel cylinder off. But the nut was still frozen onto the brake line. Okay. That's when the inductor came in.
Got it.
This guy, two thumbs. Who's got two thumbs and a brain? This guy. Because what I did was I took the inductor and I put it over that. I was able to get the inductor completely around the frozen nut. And I heated up a little bit and I got out of the way because brake fluid is flammable. Yeah. And I had a fire extinguisher right there just in case. But I heated it up a little bit and then I was able to free the nut. And it worked. So I was able to take everything apart. From the old cylinder. That one I didn't know. That was the driver's side. I'm getting ahead of myself here. But the passenger side, I was able to replace it with a new cylinder and put it all together. So I was very pleased.
Was that, it just clue me in, is that piece of line, was that reusable or is that?
Yeah.
It is.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It wasn't distorted in any way. It was not distorted. I checked it. It's good. So now here's the hard part was I had to go over to the driver's side with the rebuilt cylinder and do the same thing.
Yeah.
So I know the question you were going to ask is, you know, that debris is all going into the hole from the sanding. And I was thinking of you as I'm sanding. I'm okay. Like, Ray is going to ask me. I'm running that sandpaper back and forth. He said, you're going to get into your Ray mode, your dad mode. You're going to go, well, you know, son, there's debris in there. And that debris will cause a problem with the rubber boots. And blah, 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 blah. I know what you do. But this time you didn't have to. Why? Because I was able to free the driver's side wheel cylinder and spin that off the same exact way, get the inductor on, the same routine, and I freed the nut on the brake line there. So now I have two new wheel cylinders. So the rebuilt cylinder on the driver's side lasted all about maybe 2 days.
That's what I was going to ask. Now, I was going to ask, you know, I guess it's a good lesson just, you know, in practice, but why would you rebuild the cylinders when you had new ones on the way?
Well, no, I had the new ones in my hand. I couldn't free them. I couldn't take the wheel cylinder off. Right. And I didn't want to ruin the brake line. We talked about this on the last show. I wasn't going to re-bend a new line. I wasn't going to do it. It was like in my head. I'm like, no.
People, you see, anybody listening doesn't understand this. But the people who know you will know that you will get stuck on one point just like that. And that becomes the wall of China. And nothing is going to change because of that fact. So, I mean, I get it. I know.
You give it that Vulcan brain thing.
Yeah, yeah. And also, let me put it out there that if you want to comment on this or get in and tell us your secrets for working on brake lines, you can give us a call at 516-256-9510, and we'll be happy to talk to you and listen to your thoughts and stuff. But you know, and no, and with the sanding and the honing, whatever you were doing on the brake, you know, that's why they make brake clean. So if you bathe it enough with brake clean,
yeah,
you know, I think you'd be all right. And then some little bit of compressed air, maybe. But
I was actually what I was going to do was just run some brake fluid through the line through the open.
Yeah. Flush.
Just flush it out that way. I was going to do that, but I didn't.
All right.
But I was completely irresponsible.
Yeah. But you got a couple days out of it, so that's all right.
Oh, my gosh. This is the longest brake job of my life. The longest. Yeah. I cannot tell you. Everything. That was just the back wheels. The front wheels I did yesterday. And I cannot tell you this block of rust. Block of rust that one time was a caliper.
Yeah.
You couldn't tell the caliper from the brake pads. They were the same color.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, where does one end and the other begin? What is it? I had two screwdrivers. You know the brake caliper screwdriver dance you do? You stab it on one side of the rotor, one side of the caliper with a screwdriver, and then you come around on the other side with a screwdriver and you do this like this kind of wrestle.
Yeah.
This kind of gorilla monsoon, like someone's head, and to pop the caliper off. There was a visual there.
Yeah, that was a good one too. Yeah,
I'm sweating. But if this was what happened, both sides, driver, passenger side, both sides. I was just fortunate that the the piston was able to get pushed back. I was just fortunate. Yeah. It moved smoothly, and I was able to undo the bleeder and get all the old fluid out there that came out like black coffee.
Yeah.
And I was able to do that. Hey, and speaking of which, I got to bring something up for a second. I just want to stop you for 1 second because I'm on a roll here.
You're not stopping me. I was talking.
I was watching a YouTube video about an individual that was rebuilding a wheel cylinder. I just wanted to make sure I was doing it correctly and I didn't forget anything after not doing it for 30 years. But he said that he had this tip, in order to loosen a seized a bleeder screw, you take the wheel cylinder and drop it in a container of old motor oil.
Yeah.
And he said within a day, he was able to take it out and the brake bleeder screw was able to be freed easily that way. But he stressed the point that it was old motor oil. And I'm thinking to myself, I had a frozen pair of wire cutters one time. You know, side cutters that were literally frozen in open position. I found them like in the lawn somewhere. Who the heck knows who left them there? So you could tell they were really in great shape. I put that in a can of old motor oil that, you know, that just to have a can of waste oil just sitting around that you drain your pan in. So there's always a small little bit of motor oil. I had that in there, Ray, for 12 years. I took it out one day. It was still frozen. I'm still trying to. And I'm thinking, okay, this guy was able to free a bleeder screw off a wheel cylinder after leaving it in used motor oil for like 2 days. Is that really? What do you think of that?
You know, I'm going to say this. It's a wives' tale. I mean, I've heard of guys using diesel fuel, which I think works a little better because there's some cleaning agents in there. You know, like with anything else, was the guy's name like Jim Bob or Joe Ray or something?
No, he actually wasn't.
These guys come up with some crazy stuff.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that just on the YouTube side here for a second. I watch more YouTube videos that where people just mumble.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
What? Can't hear. This guy actually spoke clearly and concisely and spoke well. It was actually a pleasure to listen to him give kind of questionable advice, but it was a pleasure to listen to the man.
Let me ask you this while we diverted to that. What is a YouTube red flag for you? If you fire up a video that you've chosen, what if this happens within the first 20, 30 seconds, you're out. What is your red flag? What makes you say, forget it, I'm out of here?
Anybody with a severe accent that I can't understand.
That's a good one.
Or when they just start playing music and they don't say anything.
Oh, lead in.
Yeah, and they're zooming into their screen and showing you what they're doing and zooming out.
The production.
Yes.
Yeah.
When I see that. Or here's another one, and this is something you can totally understand. You think you touched the nerve again? Here's another one. When you are watching any automotive video, anyone, and it starts like this. It's like off.
Right. The heavy metal.
You don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear anymore. I want to hear, like, I don't know, give me a flute. Give me a flugelhorn. Give me an accordion. It's like, oh, someone else is playing this guitar music.
Man, sounds of the sea. I want waves.
Yeah, exactly. Give me waves lapping on the shore. As soon as I see the smoke and the black and white and the bam, 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 and here comes this charger around through the smoke, I'm like, all right, enough.
Right.
Off. Yeah.
Everybody wants to be the next YouTube phenom in that regard. Yeah.
Do something different. There's a tip.
I mean, I say this all the time, and it is very true. I do watch YouTube on my TV as in place of TV. When there's nothing on TV, I switch to YouTube, and I have a big list of people I subscribe to. And then I just go to the home tab, which is the things that are recommended for me based on my viewing, and then I see other stuff, you know, and I do. I use it as in place of TV. What's killing me now is they're adding a lot more ads.
Yes.
A lot of them. And that's getting to be, I mean, I think there's a way you can pay Like,
yeah, that's the whole idea.
I know, but you know what? They're getting me to that point where I just may do it. I don't know. I got to see what the amount is, but
and even there's no subtlety, because at one time, you know, we're used to television. What would you say? Classic television, where it fades to black and then comes up with an ad.
Right.
So your mind knows it's prepared to, you're going to see an ad, you're going to see a commercial. This goes like boom.
Yep.
It's like
in the middle of a sentence, a word.
Yeah. Shot change.
The good thing is it kind of picks up right where it left off.
Yeah, it actually, if you think about it, there's some of them that actually take like a half a second back.
Well, which I think is very smart. There's a guy that I watch, Jamel, aka Jamal. He's a black fella, and he does reaction videos to classic music, not classic as in Beethoven, but classic rock songs.
Reaction?
Yeah, it's a big thing now. Reaction videos are a big thing. There was a girl that popped up I was watching, and a girl kind of like, well, you know, my daughter's age, who again does, she'll put on the headphones and listen to, say, Boston, Long Time. It's the first time she's ever heard it. So it's her reaction to that song, you know, someone of her age at this time giving the reaction. But this guy Jamel does it, and he's got a much broader music base. And he has some really good reaction, you know, some facial reactions and some musical reactions too. There's two college kids I watched that do the same thing. Two college kids.
Really?
Yeah. So
you have a ton of time on your hands, my son.
Yeah. This is, but Jamel, what he does, I don't know what software he uses, but when, you know, he'll usually show the video if there is a video with it. Sometimes it's just maybe lyrics if there isn't a good video available. So the video will be playing, and what he'll do is you'll see him come down and pause, and he'll be like, oh no, I got to talk about this. It'll come live and tell you what his reaction is. Right. And then when he hits the button again, it goes, that video goes back like 5 seconds or so. So okay. You kind of get to repeat a little bit. So you kind of get right back up to speed where you were. You don't miss an interaction. So that's cool software. I don't know what that is, but it's neat stuff.
Yeah, you got me there. I'm just amazed that at what you're telling me that people actually watch reaction videos. Oh, yeah. I always said, and this is something just to get off the subject completely, I always said that my wife and I should have a reaction show to watching HGTV, because we watch HGTV like it's a sporting event. Okay. I don't know if anybody does this, but they'll do the reveal. They redid the whole kitchen in someone's house, and they pan across it, and both of us will start screaming like we're watching our favorite football team going, look at that backsplash. That backsplash is awful. What is wrong with these people? You don't paint cabinets that color. Are you crazy? A brick floor in the kitchen. Are you nuts? Yeah. But I love those French doors. This is what we're doing now, and it's pathetic.
Well, I'll tell you what else is pathetic. If you're not following us, if you're listening to us and not following us, it's pretty pathetic. You should get onto your computer or device and follow us on all the social media platforms, on, you know, of course, on the web and on Twitter and Facebook. It's Motormouth Radio .com, if you will. And on Instagram, it's Joe's favorite, real underscore Motormouth. And you can see what we do during a week, get involved with, and things that we get do. But I had a note from a friend of ours, a good friend, one of our friends, John. Like, we have a ton of Johns, but John messaged me today and said, "Hey, you know, I don't know if you know this, but it was 50 years ago today.
July, we started the show.
No, it feels like it. But this date in 1970 was a day that our recently departed friend Bernie Schacker." At National Speedway out in Center Mariches, had three perfect rounds of racing.
Really?
Which is something that's something of an accomplishment. So,
wow.
50 years ago today that happened. So we remember, and we have a video up on Motormouth Videos on YouTube, speaking of YouTube, where you can see our tribute, our recent tribute to Bernie. Mm-hmm. And this is just a nice little adjunct to that. So thank you, John, for that tidbit.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah.
So 516. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry. I was going to roll the number out. 516-256-9510. That's the phone number to get a hold of us. Like they used to say in the old days on WXLO.
Yeah.
Write it down. Right.
Exactly. Another thing I was just watching this morning on YouTube was it was the sounds of Chicago. I've been in this pattern. the band Chicago, Chicago Transit Authority, is one of my favorite all-time bands.
Sure.
Still is, always has been.
Same here.
Huge fan. So I've been watching a lot of videos on them, and one popped up, and it was like the Sounds of Chicago, whatever, from 1968, and I figured, oh, good, let me see. You know, that's like when the first album came out. But it wasn't. It was about Chicago, the city, and they had some DJs talking about the sound of radio in that year and the bands that bands from Chicago that were making it big and making the charts with a lot of old footage. So this is the kind of stuff, you know, I think of you when I watch it, like, yeah, this is old radio footage on YouTube now.
WLS, one of the greatest stations.
There's something for everybody up there. You can really have a lot of fun. And this is a wormhole you get in when you watch YouTube. You know, it's like,
oh, yeah,
you know.
Mm-hmm. And you know I am a big fan of radio air checks.
Yes.
And which makes me officially weird. And a radio air check is just the sound of the jock talking. It's not the music. It's because everybody knows what the music is. It's just the sound of the jock.
Right.
And because I listen to my heroes and listen to the people that I've known and worked with, it's just a lot of fun to hear it and to hear how radio was then. It's like our like the Lone Ranger was to our parents, I guess. That's what old radio is. Because if you think about it, I have air checks from 1970, and it just amazes me that they are 50 years old.
Yeah.
And I just crack up when I think of that and go, wow, I know they're old, but 50 was like the Civil War to me. And that was 50 years
ago. And now it seems like yesterday.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I know.
Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, there's been a lot of like radio remembrances. And especially on YouTube, you'll find them. And you'll find a lot of air checks, too, on YouTube.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, you can search for anything. It's very true. Very true.
Yeah. And every once in a while, you find one. I'll leave it on, like, the radio, like, and just play it and whatever I'm doing. And you hear, like, you know, what did President Johnson do now? Yeah. Who'd he fire? You hear
what's
the news?
Humphrey up to?
Right, exactly. Let's got time for to go to the phones.
I think so.
Let's do it. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to the fun. Let's say hi. You're on with the Motor Mouths.
Happy summer, gentlemen.
Hey, Bob. Oh,
what's up, Robert? How are you, sir?
We're good, guys. I wanted to run something by you on a short topic, and that is with the. I was watching the host from Roadkill. He does a AMS oil special.
Okay.
Obviously the guys are pretty knowledgeable. I guess they're from Road and Track, right?
Well, you know, there's two hosts. Well, there's a couple people associated with Roadkill. One of them I absolutely cannot stand. It's like saying Susquehanna Hat Company to me. But and he's probably the most famous of the bunch, but yeah, there's a few of them. But
This was the rounder guy. And so anyway, you know, at one time we had 8-quart pans and 7-quart pans in our cars. And the object was to keep the oil cool, or as cool as possible, cool down.
Sure.
Now, what they did was their topic was oil wash or fogging out the top of the block. Because too much oil is coming up, and it was robbing horsepower.
Okay.
So I had to watch it twice or three times to really kind of figure in where they were bringing us. And they had it. They had, you know, huge machines. They had everything on dyno. They had everything. So they were backing out a quarter time. Happened to be a Chevy Big Blocks.
I think I saw that a couple of weeks ago. Yeah.
Right, and I'm. It was actually pretty interesting. And then I'm saying to myself, well, what's more important, keeping the oil cool and keeping oil in?
Okay.
I thought the object for 8-quart pan was to keep oil on the top end of the block.
No, there's a couple things you're missing there, Bob. And what you would – that was Freiberger and Steve Dulcich. And the guy who runs the dyno, I forget his name, but he's a very, very well-respected dyno runner, engine builder guy.
It was a good program.
It is. But the idea of having the 7 or 8-quart oil pan is really to keep the oil pickup covered with oil. Like when the car lifts and launches, some cars, like with a front pickup, the oil goes back, the pickup gets uncovered. So you want to keep – it's to keep that pickup immersed in oil at all times. That's really the idea.
But didn't our pants?
They did talk about wind.
Didn't our pants have flaps in them?
No, not all did. And in that episode, they did show how they could. They added a windage tray. What was that? That might have been Uncle Tony's garage. I watch a lot of this stuff.
You hear a lot of guitars.
The windage tray is also a key to keep the windage down, which is actually the turbulence that's made from the oil when it goes over the crank and the rods and Rob's horsepower. So there's a lot of things going on. It's not a simple science. There's a lot, but
well, see, and that's the point. The point was I wanted to digest it two or three times to, you know, really get an understanding. But it was funny them backing out quarts of oil, and then the gain of horsepower was minimal, but they made their point. And lastly, then I recognized, well, the GTX 2050, it retained heat, whereas my mobile full synthetics, they don't get as hot. That oil doesn't get as hot as the other oil.
Now, how do you know that? Are you measuring the temperature? Are you doing a lab test that we don't know about?
You're doing a taste test?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't that one of the key points for synthetic oil? They're not running as hot as conventional oil.
Actually, the key point that I've always known for synthetics was lubricity, the amount of lubrication quality.
That goes without.
They talk about stiction, which is force of friction with oils. John Day is a guy who knows all about this. We've had him on the show before. That's his business is lubricity. But yeah, it's really lubricity. And there's another word too. I used it on the show with, I think I used it with you, Chris, a while ago. Now I don't remember what it is. It's a really cool, you know, $4 word. But yeah, there's a lot of components to go into it. It's not just one thing. It really isn't just one thing. And even right, with the temperature of the oil, you know, many guys would just run an oil cooler. You know, even on police cars, they'd run a cooler for the power steering fluid. So I got that.
That's in this day, right? The heavy duty packages, or the police package, or the service packages, right? They all have that, right. And even differentials packages.
Yes. So well, that's why, you know,
that's my two.
Under my car, you'd say I have a finned rear end cover. Automatic transmissions had a finned transmission pan, and they made them for the oil. Again, air passing over that is going to cool the internals. So it's just
it's like a heat. It's like a heat sink.
Exactly, right? It is a heat sink. Yes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a big science, and there's a lot that goes into it. But and anything you do is helpful, and they kind of proved that. You know, by taking oil out, which was kind of like, oh my God, you know, most people putting it in, they're taking it out. Yeah. And I didn't get to watch the end of that show because I think the week it was on that I saw it, I had to come down and start this thing off. So I didn't get to see the end of it. So I'll have to look that one up.
It made sense to a large degree. I think the horsepower gain, they documented the torque, and they documented the RPM, and they documented the horsepower gain. Though I don't see myself, it was not applicable to me.
Right. To most people, it wouldn't be. You're right. Mm-hmm. If you're using stock engines that are built, and you're not going in there modifying it, no, you're just going to put your oil in and go have a nice day. And they're talking about high, you know, like I said, high horsepower and race applications, but.
Yeah, high RPM too. Most of these. Well, I'm saying they were running big block Chevys. They were using 454s, and they were bringing up to 6100.
Right.
It's pretty high for most engines are going to cut you down. You're not going that high.
You know, with a modern V8, right? You know, the modern V8s are all. They run in the under 3,000 RPM range, like all, and on the highway you're looking at 1,700 RPM.
Sure,
you know, with the overdrive.
Absolutely.
I mean, my own car's included. So yeah, you're talking. They're talking about race applications and, you know, high horsepower. And but that's that show is Engine Masters is geared toward. It's not geared toward your you know. It's not like a road and track show where they're dealing with your average street driver. But that's a great topic, Bob. Thanks for bringing that up.
Well, happy summer, gentlemen. Hey, tell Joe D we said hi.
I sure will.
Will do.
I'll be in touch and I'll tell him.
Bye, guys.
All right.
Take care, my brother. Bye-bye.
All righty. So we are coming up to the bottom of the hour, Chris. You know what time that is. It's time for our break, but it's also time for the venerable and vaulted honor group of the hour.
The Motormouth Radio honor group of the hour. Ray Ray, thank you so much for bringing this up. And here it is. This time, if you secretly like rubber gloves, if the complaints of sweaty hands are going unnoticed or just a sham, and if you feel like you're working on your car with just naked hands feels a little strange, well, you're weird, and you're part of the Motormouth Radio honor group of the hour if you secretly like rubber gloves.
Wow. And people have no idea where these I don't have any idea either where these ideas come from, but anyway,
right here on this piece of paper
we will. I know I used to say well, it was the big drive-in from Brooklyn. Plenty of time to think. I can't say that anymore. So with that, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the harrowing tale of working with old wiring and schematics and how the two don't always intermingle like they should.
Okay.
Working on an older car.
Looking forward to this.
So we will be back in a couple of, and a short break, just a short break for Motormouth Radio, Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer, and we'll be back in a minute. And hang on 90.3 WHPC.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Lynbrook and Oceanside. We remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose the shop where you have your car fixed. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, including 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with rental car arrangements if needed. We're considered an essential business and are still open, providing touchless drop-off and pickup services. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or online at celebritychasecollision.com.
Shake off the realities of the day, broaden your musical horizons, and embrace the diversity every Monday afternoon at 5 for 2 hours of Revelations. The show offers a potently unique collection of music with an emphasis on themes and rock rarities, an occasional tour de force of blues and soul mixed with compelling sets of folk and folk rock. I'm Steve Kay, and I've got the perfect soundtrack for your drive home every Monday afternoon at 5. On Revelations, right here on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
All right, we're back. Motormouth Radio, Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer on Long Island's only automotive talk show. We're talking today about all sorts of crazy stuff, wheel cylinders, motor oil, YouTube, and lubricity and all sorts of cool stuff. So I think it's
Connecticut's only local talk show too. I still haven't found one here. If there is one, please let me know. But I still haven't found one. But
Long Island and Connecticut. So, well, you're gonna. Yeah, I guess you should maybe just start doing some searching up there.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to you, and you can get in touch with us. You can give us a call at 516-256-9510 and get in on the fun if you'd like. But until then, I want to talk about, I'm working on Mike's Chevelle, and I've been tasked with trying to get some of the electrical gremlins. This is at the end of the project now, fixed, right, like to get dash lights working and other things. And I got the dash going yesterday. Again, this car is screwing with my head because, you know, Michael asked me, you know, okay, there was something that failed, and I'll tell him, okay, it's working. How'd you fix it? And I literally have to tell him, I don't know.
Why did you come to that conclusion?
Because I'll test things that test good and then do other things, and then the thing I tested good is bad. And then I'll do other things, and the thing that was bad is good again, and then something else is bad. It's like these gremlins are everywhere. And the dash lights started working, you know, and I said, okay, you know, what I did is I took the switch out of my 65 Pontiac is the same switch on a 71 Chevelle, except for one terminal. And the difference is you can buy one for a 71 Chevelle. You can't buy one for a 65 Pontiac. They're worth like, tons,
yeah,
you know,
what's the word you use? Unobtainium?
Unobtainium. Yeah. But anyway, I brought a switch with me that I had for my spare switch, and I tested it. I knew it worked good. Plugged it into his car, and then I stuck the test light in the green wire, which controls the dash lights.
Sure.
And pulled the switch out, and the test light lit up. And I moved the rheostat and it dimmed. I'm like, okay, the test light works, but I'm not seeing the dash lights working. So what, you know, it goes from there to that circuit board. So where's the problem? You know,
ground?
Well, you know, you could say that, but you know, then why is it working from the point of the switch where it's coming out of that wire? I mean, there is, if it would be open, you'd have open. So sure. Anyway, they started working. So we leave that as it is. Then I said, good, I'm done. I am done. And then I looked, I'm kneeling in the driver's open door and I'm looking and I see the right side courtesy light on that's below the dash. There's a right and a left and there's a dome light.
Sure.
And they had all been working. The right side light was lit. The left side wasn't. And the dome light was out. I'm like, how'd that happen? Like, what? Huh? Again, here we go. So I'm looking at the schematics and I know from experience, GM uses an orange and a white wire on pretty much all the interior lighting.
Yes.
Standard.
Yes.
So now what do you do when the schematic shows one thing, but you don't see that in the car? Like the light on the left side had an orange and a black wire. Like it should be. Where's the white wire? There's a white wire on the pin switch, but this should be. So now you're trying to use your best judgment and use the schematic as your guide. And it's not really helping because what you're seeing isn't what the diagram is showing you.
Right.
So where was the cross? Is the schematic of a different age or vintage, or did somebody change something in the car?
And I would go for the latter. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's problems like this that I've been fighting, and I had to leave it like that yesterday. I actually left the car with the dash lights working, and I got the dome light working again, but not the bottom lights. And you'd love this, Chris. I had to the little plastic housing that holds the courtesy light under the dash.
Right.
I took it down because I wanted to probe it, and I took the bulb out, and then what fell out after it was a little brass button, like a mushroom head, and a
sure.
spring. That's on the end of the wire. I know where it came from. And I was like,
yes,
no. All right. And if you look at those little brass buttons, the factory puts such a deep crimp on them,
mm-hmm.
almost all the way to the other side. My thought would be, you know, to uncrimp it and put new wire in there. But I know from experience, you're not doing that.
No, I know what I'm doing.
Experience has taught me to clean the groove of the crimp with a file.
You bet.
Pin it with solder and solder the wire into the groove.
Go directly to it with solder.
But now to assemble this, you need to take that wire that's connected under the dash. It's not a free, you can't take it out with you.
Right.
Slide the spring on. Don't forget that. It's like threading a brake line, but don't forget to put the ferrule.
Oh, I would have done that twice. Totally.
Put the spring on, put it through the housing,
right.
And now solder it with a pair of helping hands. But the helping hands are now on the floorboard of the car. And, of course, mm-hmm. I have a hot soldering iron with a new interior. I'm kneeling on the ground outside the car. Now, Mike happened to be in the passenger seat, and I said to him, you know, just to let you know, this is one of my pet peeves with school and higher learning. They teach people how to do things, and like what happened with Joe's daughter with the battery cables. She's an engineer, right? Sure. But there was no practical knowledge. Well, they didn't teach her how to do that, obviously, not in her schooling. But they don't. You know, she can read a schematic and say, okay, these need to be changed. But that doesn't equate to what's under the hood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I told Mike, I said, this is what happens. They don't teach guys in the real world. And I said, when some of the classes we have at the school that I interact with, the electronic classes, there's always guys who know cars. There always are, even in this day and age. And sure. I usually, those guys gravitate toward me. And then I'll tell them, listen, guys, you're troubleshooting a circuit board or you're working. I said, and your soldering sucks. Like, you obviously, you're in the right class because you need to practice this. You know, mm-hmm. that's what you're here for. And I'm going to help you. But I tell them, but when you're working on a car in an adverse situation under the dash with limited space with the wires, you can't yep. move your arms. You're like this. Your feet are up over here. I said to Mike, kind of like I am right now. I said, a whole other skill set has to come into play. And it's the skill set of mechanical acrobatics.
Yeah, mechanical acrobatics.
I know you used the term just like that many years ago, and I wish I could remember it, but it typified what we were doing. You know, it's...
I like yours.
And Joe used one, too. Joe had another one. It was like something about dashboard aerobics or whatever. I don't know. And that's it, because anybody can do this stuff on a... Well, not anybody, but a lot of people can do stuff on a bench.
Right.
Do it under the dash and do it with no light, or do it with, you know, things poking in, and now you have to be careful. So it was just like this learning moment. So I actually left the car yesterday with the dome light working, but not the courtesy light. So,
and now the battery's going to be dead when you come back.
I disconnected it.
Oh, all right.
So I'll get back to that. But again, it's, you know, when you do these things, you're fighting against the system that you have no control over, because all the wiring in the car is original. And I told him, I said, listen, my car that's above yours has 55-year-old wiring harnesses in it. I didn't change my wiring harnesses, but I did make one harness out of two harnesses, and I did go through it wire by wire, and, you know, and it works fine. Not so with his car, you know.
But what you did, and this is something I found interesting, what you did was you were able to remove the Chevelle's wiring harness, put it aside, and then reinstall it again, right?
Yeah.
That's the order of events, which, of course, and you know this better than I do, and I shouldn't even be bringing this up. You should be jumping all over it. But when you bend an old wire, what you're doing is you're creating small little cracks within the wire structure itself. Am I correct?
That's correct.
So just that alone, I'm assuming, knowing electric, the limited amount of knowledge I have on electricity and current flow, that's going to give you heartache as it is, just at that point. See, I'm doing the same thing that you're doing with the Chrysler. It's got a 50-year-old harness in it. I'm not touching it. Yeah, but I do have electrical problems in the car. I just recently found, I went to go start it just yesterday to get it out of the garage, just in case the LeBaron fell on it, because it was up in the air with no tires on it and two jacks and a bunch of jack stands. So I figured, I'm getting in and out of the LeBaron. I don't want to get in it and then it falls into the 300. So let me just back that out. Right. I got in the car, I hit the key, nothing, dead, morta, tutte morta.
Nice.
So I'm like, what? So literally I jumped I put my other old battery in, fire it up, get it out of the garage. But when it was sitting in the driveway while I was waiting, I just ran an ammeter across the negative terminal and the negative wire, and just to see what I was getting a draw. I'm getting a 0.17 draw of amperage.
Okay, that's a 10.
Right. And I'm thinking, what can possibly be? I could understand if it was like 3 amps or 5 amps.
Oh,
or whatever.
Let me tell you this. If it was 0.01 or 0.03, that'd be 300 milliamps.
Right.
That would be indicative of like a digital clock or something.
Right. Right. Agreed.
A tenth of an amp. Actually, you know, different car manufacturers specify how much load, freestanding load is acceptable. And sometimes they go up to like, you know, seven. Well, yeah, I've seen specs for 7/10, but to me, that's unacceptable.
Well, 2 weeks will drain this battery to a rock.
Yeah.
So that's what it'll do. Cause that was the last time I drove the car. It was like 2 weeks ago.
We did talk about this and you know, the way to diagnose it is you put that ammeter back in like you've done.
Yeah.
And then you pull fuses one by one.
Right.
And if you pull a fuse and that goes down to zero, you know, at least that's the circuit that's drawing the current.
Of course.
You can look there. A lot of people don't know that. And rightfully so, a lot of people stay away from that like they should. Because next thing you know, they're calling Hartford because of the fire in their driveway.
Right. No, it's true. But my point being is that as long as the harness, to me, my theory is, as long as the harness has not been touched or tampered with, you're okay. Because even if those cracks are there, they're not going to separate or be disturbed. I'm assuming, and even if they're not there, that everything is still together in one piece and not disturbed in any way. So when I get my hand under the dash and start wrestling around, I try and be as careful as I can. I'm not always practicing what I'm preaching here, but I try. There's an awareness of it.
I got to tell you something. I like to look at the classic failures that have gone on through time. Like
the show.
No, yeah, like this show is right. I mean, I got stuck with one years ago that I had heard about, but until it was my turn, I got caught by it. It was a bulb where the filaments actually collapsed and touched, caused it dead short, and it took days to find it. Because who the hell is a bulb?
Yeah, totally.
By working on the Chevelle, a lot of the bulbs that were put in were new, and we all know what new means.
Never ever used.
Never worked. And I'm finding these nice 1156, 1157s with bright silver bases. They're made in China.
Ooh.
And let me tell you something.
Really?
Throw them. Just like break them on the ground. Have a little fun pop. They're not made to the same quality as a good old Wagner or Sylvania or the bulbs that we know.
Right.
So go use older bulbs. But okay. A bulb can fail like that. A filament can touch and cause a draw. And it doesn't have to be a direct short. It can be almost a direct short, you know.
That's actually a very good way of looking at things. Because, yeah.
Cigarette lighters were another one in the older cars.
Oh, yeah. But a cigarette lighter would probably cause more of an amp draw, I would think.
If it dead shorts, absolutely. But it doesn't always dead short. Sometimes it just almost.
Yeah. Short. It just hangs there. But this is something, like you said, we did touch on this in the past, and it's reared its ugly head again. So I did not fix it completely and entirely. But I'm going to do like what you said. Yeah.
The other thing to look at is go out to the car at night when it's dark, obviously dark out, and look.
Sneak up on it.
Sneak up on it. No, because I've seen problems where like a glove box light, the switch just either was out of it and then the glove box light was on. You don't see that during the day. Or an ashtray light could be on because it's just a jar and it's going to be drawing current and you're never going to find it unless you just see that one at night, you know.
And you would think as utilitarian as this car is on the interior, because to me it really resembles a taxicab, it has ashtray lights. They're this cute little blue lens that gives you like this little blue hue, which I'm starting. And I'm like you. I like to make sure all of my lights are working at all times. And I don't know if this car is designed this way or I have no clue. But if you open up the driver's door, the driver's light. Now, there's no dome light, obviously. There's a courtesy light that sits on the back armrest, the rear armrest, the front portion of the rear armrest has a courtesy light on it. So it illuminates pretty much that lower area of the door sill and everything. Well, on this car, you open up the driver's door, only the driver's light comes on.
Okay.
Go over to the passenger side, you open up the passenger door, and only the passenger light comes on and the courtesy light comes on under the dash because there's a light, like a map light, basically, under the dash. So that's how that works. And I still can't figure that out. I'm wondering if that's engineered that way.
Let me tell you this. I was just looking at the schematic this morning for the Chevelle. Literally, I was out on my deck with coffee looking at the schematic. And they are wired together on the Chevy. So one door opens, both lights.
Both lights come on, yeah.
But the Chrysler, being a higher-level car, may have been designed so just that light comes on for just that passenger. That may be. That sounds to me like a design flaw. Not a flaw. A designed parameter. Otherwise, because if they're done together like normally, I'm not going to say either they both work or they don't, because the Chevelle had one working and one wasn't.
Right. It's true. And I'm thinking the frustration level on my end is I'm thinking, well, it could be the door pins. But why would the door pin only open one – switch on one light? So it's one of those things that I have to go through, just like the heartache you're going through. You know, I totally understand and sympathize with you.
Joe just got in touch with us, and he what he likes to do is use a FLIR, which is a forward looking infrared FLIR gun on the fuse box. So you can, and that's a fantastic tool, but not everybody has it. They're making them handheld. They make a cell phone adapter now that's a FLIR adapter.
What does it do?
It looks at the heat signature. It's forward-looking infrared, so it's looking for the infrared heat signature. And that's what happened like yesterday. Mike and I were looking at the dash. I'm like, yeah, I saw the light coming through the housing. He didn't see it, but he reached back and took a bulb out. And he says, here, feel this. And he put it by my cheek. And I'm like, yeah, I feel the heat of the bulb. It was
It was warm.
So, yeah, the infrared is a... That's a diagnostician's tool. It's not one that everybody has. I don't have one. I mean, I know Joe was talking about getting one, and he certainly, you know, does do enough electrical diagnosis, but even he didn't have one.
But now what does this do? You point this infrared at the fuse box. It senses the heat of the current flowing through the wires?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Well, you've seen
that sensitive.
You've seen the pictures of the infrared glowing. You know, like will they do a heat signature or something?
Yeah.
it's the same thing, but now it's like it's in a handheld gun. So when you look at a fuse box, just the current going through. Now, again, you may have to change a setting to get a more sensitive reading.
Right.
You know, because you can look at it, have it look at yourself and boom, you're bright red.
Right. Right.
That's what it does. It's like it's looking at the weather map. You see the reds, the greens, the blues, they all mean something. That's sure. Infrared is what it is. So, yeah, you could probably change the sensitivity of it. And in a case where you don't have a dead short, you're looking for a slight draw, you may want to make the sensitivity a little higher, more sensitive. And you could look, like I said, at wires, at devices, at the fuses. And great tool, but like I said, not everybody has one. Yeah. I don't. So I don't even think of that because I don't have it. You know?
Well, to me, I think the Chrysler only has about 7, maybe 8 fuses.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the old barrel type.
Right. Right.
And I think 2 or 3 of them, stay on continuously.
Battery power. Sure.
Right. So
that's standard. Yeah. That's normal.
It should take all of 10, 15 minutes to dope this out.
That's if it's a fused circuit. There are unfused circuits.
Right.
You know, in a car. I'm not sure how Chrysler did it.
I don't think Chrysler is sure how Chrysler did it.
They may not be. But, you know, that's when if you go online and look for the you can Google it and look for the electrical. You'll get the information. You'll find it. It'll be on a forum where you'll find a schematic.
Yeah, well, usually you get a YouTube video and it starts off like this.
Right. Yeah. And it'd be flames and soot. And you're like,
sunrise, smoke. Here comes this charger.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know. And I roll my eyes and shut it off.
That's why I like the guy, like our good friend Clay Kuhn. He makes good videos. He has a short little intro that he does. And that's the problem. When you watch any channel regularly like I do, okay, you've seen the guy's intro 9,000 times already, you know?
Right, exactly.
But, you know, I got to keep saying, but it's for the new people, you know, just like with us. We play an intro, people have heard it already, you know? But
right.
Maybe somebody doesn't, you know, and hasn't. So, yeah, it's something you just got to live with.
I want to have a contest or something. Anybody that can actually do our intro can imitate it. On the phone. Cool. If you could do the whole intro.
Yeah. So yeah, wiring stuff is fun. Let me talk about we still have some time left. You can still call 516-256-9510. Not Tom from Massapequa. You call at the last minute all the time. Give someone else a chance. Sorry, Tom. Upcoming, I did have a conversation with our old friend Artie Schilling from Artie's Party.
Artie's Party.
Yeah, he's not doing that anymore, but he wants to get on the radio and talk about that. And now the transition into whatever's next. He's still pinstriping down in Myrtle Beach.
Wow. I
was hoping to get him on today. That didn't work, but we'll get him in soon. And also Tony D'Agostino from Tony's Parts we'll have on.
Hey,
I got to reach out to him again. And Mark Warman from Graveyard Cars. All these guys have busy schedules and we only do this one show. So it's tough sometimes to make it correspond. It's
right.
Yeah. It was nice doing, it was nice doing two shows a week and who knows, maybe we'll do a podcast one day. We'll do something different.
I think that's a stellar idea. Sure. Why
we'll
not
add to it? Yeah. Keep
we'll do the other Motor Mouth Radio. Like we used to do. Thursday, right. The Thursday show is the other Motor Mouth Radio.
You know, I remember we first did it and the phones were like, you know, just, you know, they were cobwebs. There was nobody calling because they didn't know. And then we started getting those calls and we would query the caller and say, hey, how'd you find us? Oh, you know, I like to listen Sunday, but I can't because I do this, I do that. But, you know, now I'm having lunch. It was a 12 to 1 show. So I can listen on my lunch hour. Wow. Great. We just got, you know.
Oh yeah,
and that's how we got all the guests from the industry who took Sunday as a personal day. They didn't work on Sunday. Those guys became Thursday guests, which is
I love those calls we get. Where's the gardening show I used to listen to? How come the gardening show isn't here?
Where's Oasis?
Yeah, it's true. The one thing that I found interesting, just to touch on that for a second, but the one thing I found interesting about the Thursday show compared to the Sunday show was neither of them were the same. which I thought was kind of odd. You would think that one would be a continuation of the other. They both had a life of their own, and that would be a reason to actually do a podcast or do something like that other than our regular Sunday show, but to do something like that and just to continue on another form of the week. As
I can tell you this from my personal perspective, I came into each of those shows with a totally different head, a totally different mindset. One was, like I said, on a Thursday, I was already at work. So it was, you know, I was transitioning from the morning at work to do the
that
show.
That one head that you had that looked like Ethel Merman.
Yeah, that was one I used to use. Yeah. No. And your Vivian Vance was really cool. They complimented each other nicely.
Anybody under the age of 40 right now has no clue what we're talking about.
Myrna Loy threw me. I didn't expect that one. You know? But anyway, so yeah, we kind of covered all. We don't shy away from stuff like that.
But, no, but you're right. There was a different mindset when you and I got together on the Thursday compared to the Sunday. I don't know what it was. Like, I don't know if it was more businesslike on a Thursday or more casual on a Sunday. I don't know.
If you think of it, just in the studio, you know, Jim Green, the station manager, was there on a Thursday. He wasn't there on a Sunday.
Right.
It's not that we came in going, oh, you know, it wasn't that, but it was a different crew. Different people were there. It was, you know. It was more the students from the station who were there on a Thursday.
They watch these old guys think they know radio.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what they talk. Yeah, and then they started coming in and asking us questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, then who is the studious one now, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's true. But yeah, something to add to our Sunday show would probably be a wise choice. That would be something to explore.
Right.
That's for sure. But yeah, and a lot of, you know, there's so many other things that we always need to touch on in this show. And it's funny, whenever I'm working on a vehicle, I always think of like hundreds of things that we can touch on. And it was something I missed when I wasn't doing the show. And now I have the opportunity. But of course, my mind is gone. But at least I remembered some of the things. But there's like a whole procedure. And you really touched on it this time when you talked about that mechanical acrobatics.
Yeah.
And just before you, how many times have you sat down to work on something on a wheel? Like you take the wheel off, you sit down and get ready to work. And all of a sudden you turn around and there's like a tool that's missing. You got to get back up.
Oh,
you got to get the tool, come over, sit back down again. And then there's, oh wait, I got to get back up, go get a rag and come back. There's a time. And I've gotten to this point in my old age where before I even sit down once, because there's a limited amount of time I can only sit down and get up nowadays.
Right.
But I have to make sure everything is all around me. And these are things I've learned on the job. These are things I've learned.
Or what's worse is you know you have the screwdriver laying behind you, but now where is it? It's under my shoulder. You can't reach it. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to end on that note because Kim is getting ready to come in with Thunder Road. We have to give her space. And we will be back next week. So what do we always say, Chris? What's our mantra?
Don't follow us home and try not to use the used motor oil for anything but to recondition it.
Exactly. So for Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino, Motormouth Radio, we'll see you next week. And we're out of here, 90.3 WHPC.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Lynbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose the shop where you have your car fixed. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, including 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with rental car arrangements if needed. We're considered an essential business and are still open, providing touchless drop-off and pickup services. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or online at celebritychasecollision.com.